Follow my lead.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Beauty Talk with Illusions Cosmetics. Good evening. This is Janice Tunnell. I'm co-owner of Illusions Cosmetics, and I am joined tonight in my sister's absence by Arlise Davis, an esthetician and makeup artist from the Washington, D.C. area. Thank you, Arlise, for joining us.
No, thanks for having me.
And tonight we're also supposed to be joined by Dr. Angela P. Thrower of Miami, who hasn't called in yet, and we'll be discussing skincare for women of color. So I just want to start the conversation off for now with Arlise. Arlise, can you just give us a brief background of what you do and who you are?
Again, like she said, my name is Arlise Davis, and I am from the Washington, D.C. area. I have been a licensed esthetician for the past 9 years, and probably for the past 5 years, I have been an aesthetic clinician, which is an esthetician that actually works in the medical field, but I also practice makeup artistry as well. So my area of concentration is working with people who have skin problems as far as like acneic skin and actually getting their skin back healthy and teaching them how to have a good home care regimen to give them that healthy skin and that glow that they are that all of us are in need of and searching for.
Now, Arlise, is there a difference between just being an esthetician who works like in a spa doing facials as opposed to what you do working as a medical esthetician? What are the differences?
One is just more heavily concentrated in the medical field, so you're going to work with people depending on the dermatologist that you are under or plastic surgeon. It's just depending on which field in the medical industry that you are in. You're going to actually be working with people in the derm section. It's going to be more with, you know, just different skin, I'm not going to say diseases, but, you know, just different skin conditions. And then, of course, with plastic surgery, it's more post-surgery where you're just actually helping that person's skin get back to normal from having some type of surgery that has been done to it. Versus being a regular esthetician in a spa atmosphere, which is going to be more of relaxation, but also regimen techniques to help you in aid of what a dermatologist would do.
Okay. Okay. Do you think that there are some problems that are particularly unique to just black skin only?
Well, more, I wouldn't say just black skin. I would say probably just women of color. We tend to hyperpigmentate on an area where there has been, I guess, some type of force, what would I say, just like extracting and things of that area. I personally think that of women of color need to exfoliate more to help renew the skin, that kind of give it that glow, whereas someone who is doesn't have as much melanin in their skin, was going to be more of your whiter skin, that doesn't actually scar as easy or tend to remember when something is done to it, such as like extracting, so therefore the scarring doesn't appear where it does in women of color it does.
Okay. Now, how do you deal with skincare issues as a makeup artist?
As far as dealing with them, it's dependent on the situation. I mean, I guess if it's just a first time meeting situation, just kind of get as much information as you possibly can about this person's regimen and what they're doing. How do they take care of their skin? What are they actually using on their skin? That definitely helps aid in you as a makeup artist placing makeup on their face, because sometimes they tend to either have a quick reaction to it, they're very sensitive, or it just doesn't seem to really take to the skin the way that, you know, if a skin is drier or something of that nature and you're not realizing how they're actually taking care of their skin, I find sometimes putting makeup on their skin kind of like has a reaction, like it kind of gets that ashy look really quickly, or it doesn't just blend with the skin properly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just want to take a few seconds just to let our listeners know that they can call in and join the conversation at 914-803-4399. Again, this number is 914-803-4399. And you can also email your questions to info@illusionsbeauty.com. That's ILLUSIONSBEAUTY.com. Okay. One of the things that I was thinking about earlier is, and I'm not sure this is a question that I was going to ask Dr. Thrower, but I'm going to ask you because I know as a makeup artist you come across all kinds of skin tones. So I wanted to know, if you know, does black skin differ for women of color in reference to light versus dark African-American women, light African-American women, dark African-American women, or African-American women versus African women, African-American women versus Afro-Latina women?
And differ as far as what, texture or just the skin in general?
Skin in general, like, well, you know, texture, if there are different issues that, you know, African-American women may have with their skin that African women don't, or dark African-American women have that light African-American women don't. I mean, it's kind of
right. Right. Well, I understand what you're saying. Well, of course, in a darker African-American woman or an African, of course, the skin is just, it's, to me, it just appears to be very flawless. The pores are not normally large. And I'm not sure if that comes into play just because of the skin is darker, but to me, they just tend to have, darker skin tends to have less flaws to it.
Right.
Or did I say that right? It tends to be flawless. You know, as a makeup artist, it's an easy canvas. It's a beautiful canvas to work with because it is flawless, so you're not doing so much as corrective, you know, whereas in lighter women, whether Latino or just a lighter African-American, it's not all of them have very healthy skin, so it seems to be that you are actually having to go in and do some type of corrective measure to get that canvas to be the way that you want it to be. So I would say, yes, there is a difference, but it's going to be just as far as what you're working with as, you know, the canvas aspect. The skin, to me, seems a lot healthier, and there are not as many flaws, or the flaws are there, you just cannot see it because the tone of the skin looks even.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. That makes plenty of sense. What part does nutrition play in gray skincare?
I would think it plays a big part. And each person, I think that they react differently to the foods that they eat. The old saying goes, oh, I can't eat any chocolate. You know, chocolate breaks my skin out. But that may not apply to everyone.
Right.
It may just be the caffeine, you know, because chocolate contains a lot of caffeine. It may just be just the caffeine agent that is in that candy that they're eating is causing their skin to break out. So, some people say that goes for them. Then others can eat candy and never have a pimple or a breakout in their life. So, but I think that the main thing is water. Water is very good for anyone, no matter what, you know, color your skin is, because it does play a large part in, you know, the flushing. And the skin is, of course, shows pretty much everything, or whether it's something going wrong with your kidneys, if you're having problems with your digestive tract, everything shows up on the face. So I think that water plays a large part in that, in making sure that these organs are working the way that they should be and being flushed properly with the water.
Now, are there, do you know of or can reference any particular types of skin conditions that may appear, I know you just mentioned the problem with the kidneys or the digestive tract, but can you think of any skin conditions that would appear when we are not getting the proper nutrition or not drinking enough water?
A lot of times fine lines, I wouldn't say it's a condition, but the skin does become dehydrated and it does tend to show, especially if you're wearing makeup, a lot of times to the naked eye and not looking under a magnifying lamp, you can see it. If I'm looking under a magnifying lamp, I'm going to be able to see how badly your skin is dehydrated or just slightly dehydrated versus just with the naked eye, I may not see it. But if you apply makeup, you tend to see more of the lines in the skin where it looks like, you know, just kind of very fine lines, but you can kind of see that as you're placing makeup on. But as far as I can't reference right off right top of my head right at this moment any particular skin conditions that come from lack of, you know, drinking water.
Okay, or proper nutrition.
Right.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about the types of services? Now, you said, you know, say the name of the title again. It's a medical, what was that?
It's an aesthetic clinician.
Aesthetic clinician. Okay, now can you tell us a little bit about the types of services that are offered at a facility where an aesthetic clinician would work?
Chemical peels, laser hair removal, dermabrasion, and those are going to be like the core things. Everything else kind of falls pretty much under the same, you know, as an esthetician, if that doctor's office, you know, allows those services in his office. But the main thing are the chemical peels.
Now, day spas. Some day spas. Don't they offer microdermabrasion, or am I wrong?
They do. No, they do, and they offer chemical peels, and some of them also will offer laser hair removal. The key to that is that if it is in a day spa, quote unquote, they kind of call it a medi spa at that point because a doctor has actually backed them. So they will have a doctor that actually has an office there to say that they can. That he's backing them doing these services. And a lot of the times it is just training on the actual machine that will allow them to call themselves this medi spa. But when you get into a doctor's office, like an actual doctor's office, the chemical peels, the dermabrasion, and the laser hair removal is done at a different percentage where you might do a 10% chemical peel in a medi spa, but you get to a doctor's office and it may be 20 to 30%. It's going to be at a medical grade. So it's going to be a lot different than something that is actually a service that is actually performed in a day spa or a medi spa.
Now, let me ask you, is that something controlled by the state? Like, for instance, if you go to a day spa?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's controlled because in order for, myself to work in a doctor's office, I somewhat fall under his liability insurance. So it's like I'm not that nurse, but I'm somewhat liable under his license. You know, understand what I'm saying? It's like it's very well controlled because the medical field has to actually say this person can work here, and that doctor is saying, okay, she's being trained, and she's under me. She's a medical esthetician. She has this training, but there's not we get our license, but it's not a license that says, like, you're a registered nurse. It's just pretty much you go through the courses, and you become an esthetician, a medical esthetician. So it's a training, but at the same time, it's like you got to have that doctor that believes in you and will give you that chance to put you in his office to handle those services.
Gotcha. So I think that's probably something that's important for the listeners to know, for someone who wants to have those particular services, to know that if they're going into a spa versus a medical doctor's office, that the level of the treatment is a little higher.
Right. And a lot of times it's to the severity. It's like how your skin, you know, if you go in for a consultation and they're like, you really need this, you're going to have to get 4 or 5 treatments. It's like, I feel that if you have to have something done in series like that, if it's that series where you have to come back for a series of them, then maybe you should check with the dermatologist to see what that dermatologist says. If he's offering something where you're getting at a medi spa, or I'm just going to say a day spa, and they're going to do it at a 10%, and if you go to an actual plastic surgeon or you're going to a dermatologist, they're going to do it at 30%, and you may only have to come back for two treatments versus six treatments at 10%. You're still getting the same service, but you're going back less times, and you're probably going to be more effective because it's going to really peel the skin the way that you are expecting it to do. You know, when they tell you the, you know, what things to expect, you, I would say go to a dermatologist versus hitting a medi spa.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, are there any services that one might find themselves needing that couldn't be addressed at either one of those types of facilities, do you think?
What, at a medi spa?
A medi spa or a medical dermatologist office that, you know, I'm talking about conditions of the skin.
You said, is there any needs that couldn't be met?
I'm wondering if there are any services or treatments. Or let me put it this way. Are there any conditions, I guess, that someone could find themselves having in regards to their skin, particularly, you know, the face, where one of those two types of facilities could not treat it?
No. I think between the two, you could definitely have your needs met, whether, you know, one is for both relaxation and one is for corrective. Just to depend on, it really depends on how extensive the services are offered in a medi type spa versus a regular spa. Of course, the medi spas tend to get more into different things, but it just really depends on how large the facility is and as far as how broad their menu is. They can offer anything from skincare to minor plastic surgery. So it just really depends on the spa.
Okay. Now, a few minutes ago, you had answered a question before, and you started talking about like things that people eat, like chocolate that breaks people out and things like that. And that was leading me, and I got off track a little, but that was leading me to another question that I was going to ask about, are there any particular ingredients that you think women of color should avoid?
I would honestly just say no off, you know, the top of my head, because every person's body is so, I guess, just unique in its own way, that things that may affect me may not affect you. To tell you to avoid it may be something that your body needs. You know, so I couldn't say stay away from olive oil, and olive oil might just be something that your skin needs or your body just absorbs well. So it's just really, I guess, on how your body processes certain foods. How, you know, with me, I would say, you know, I have to kind of limit myself with red meats because I tend to see my skin looks a little dull or I'm not processing it well or things of that nature. So it's really, I wouldn't say that it was something in particular for women of color to completely avoid, because it just may be just that person. Just like I said with the chocolate, I can eat chocolate and won't have a breakout, but chocolate is not the thing that tends to break people out. Normally I think that it's either hormonal or it's stress level. And the way your body is reacting to a situation, if you're really stressed out, if you're just like have a high stress job, it seems like those are the people who tend to break out more, whereas somebody whose body can handle, stressful situations on the regular basis, they may never break out. So it's just really, to me, I just think it's just the individual and how they handle situations or food or processing food in that matter.
Okay. Cool. We've had some questions that came in from, you know, via email, and because you've worked as an esthetician, you know, doing facials and that kind of thing, I wanted to ask a question that actress Jasmine Lewis sent in, and she gave a little scenario of pretty much what happened. She got a facial, and then immediately after the facial, she had a brow wax, and she was really burned badly. She began to peel and scar, and she said at this point it is just now beginning to heal. So I don't know how long ago, you know, she had the facial and the brow wax, but it's just now beginning to heal. She peeled and scarred after burning badly. Her question is, how soon after a facial should you get a brow wax? Because she's suggesting that you should never get a facial and a brow wax on the same day. But have you seen a situation like this before, or do you know anything about how long you should wait?
To answer that, it could be a combination of things. The facial and the brow wax on the same day, in services, I have done that. I typically do all waxing before I would actually do a facial. If she did it in the reverse order, the only thing that I could think of, it was a chemical reaction. Secondly, it could have been the type of wax that was being used. Some wax tend to pull on the skin more. I'm going to say more of a honey wax tend to pull on the skin more than like a cream wax, something that is more of a cream base. But to go back to the actual question of getting them done on the same day, I would say yes. I wouldn't say no. But I think what actually happened is during the process of a facial, your skin is being analyzed, it's being steamed, it's being cleansed, then it's being exfoliated. Depending on to the degree of the exfoliation, if she had a special type of facial, if she had a facial that was like maybe a pumpkin peel or something that was a lactic acid or a flower acid peel, anything that was, I'm going to say, more invasive to the skin could cause such a reaction at the end, because while that facial had removed superficial layers of the skin, which that's what exfoliation tends to do, it just removes like a superficial layer of the skin, then that is also what waxing does. Some people tend to be waxed, and then they realize that they their skin looks a little lighter than normally, but all of a sudden it seems like the color comes back in. Well, that's because when you're waxing, you are removing a superficial layer of the skin. So with that process taking place in the actual facial and then taking place at the end, then that's probably why she was peeling and burning, because instead of just, I'm just going to say, if we were to label the skin level 1, 2, and 3, which is the epidermis, the top layer, if you remove that and then you're going to the next layer of the skin, that is kind of where you, not, I don't want to, where technically you are scarring the skin, because that's the second layer. You're like hitting the second layer, so now you're ripping that off when you're doing wax. But when I actually remove hair, I tend to use more cream wax on my black skin, because of the fact that I don't want to pull more on the skin. I want to pull less on the skin and get more of the hair. So that there's really no room for irritation whether I perform any other types of services. And I haven't had that done. So and then also a rule of thumb, if she waxes first, then I get a facial, then what's going to happen is you just kind of avoid over top of the brow area when you're exfoliating, because technically that has already been done. So I guess in the future to Jasmine is kind of find out the wax that they're using in the spa, ask could they wax you prior to, and just avoid the eye area. And these are just some things that you can request from your esthetician to keep that from happening again, because of course after facial you just want this, you know, polished look, and you want your brows done as well. So I can understand that, you know, totally.
Nobody wants to go today for one service and then have to come back a couple of days later for the next service. You kind of want to
exactly. So Yeah, and it can be done. It definitely can be done. So it's just, you know, things that as a consumer, when you're getting these services, if no one is going to educate you through the process, that is just something that I probably wouldn't have done. I don't think I ever waxed anybody after a facial. I've always waxed them before, just because residue and things of that nature. And normally you use some type of Azelaine cream or something to soothe the skin. So if you're doing all of that and then you're going to, after you've cleansed the face, it's, to me, that's what's the purpose. It's like do the waxing, you know, first and then go into the services.
Right, exactly. And I think that was a excellent question, because listening to your answer, Jasmine is suggesting not to do it that way ever, but you have a really good reason for why you can do it on the same day, and a really good reason for probably why she burned.
Yeah, and that's it. And it's just, it was, you know, I'm not going to say that the esthetician was, she probably thought, you know, she probably had been doing it this way for years and no one has never had a reaction, but it's just some people's skin is a little bit sensitive, you know, depending on where Jasmine lives, if she's in the sun a lot. Jasmine could have been in the sun and then came in, you know, late afternoon after being in the sun all day, got a facial, got waxed, and I mean, you're talking about skin being photosensitive, just being in that light, and you just don't know what happened before Jasmine came in to cause this reaction. But to me, if you want to kind of just alleviate any risk at all, you know, I'm going to do the waxing first, and then, you know, because you could kind of see how sensitive the person's skin is when they first come in, you know,
right.
I mean, excuse me, from when you wax them. So that would have kind of given her a thumbs up, like, okay, well, when I go to do this, maybe I'll do more of a soothing facial on her instead of, you know, doing more of a deep cleansing facial.
Oh, gotcha. So it's a lot of things to be considered if you're going to do both things on one day.
Yes, definitely.
Gotcha. Well, you know, some of these questions I was going to ask Dr. Thrower, I'm pretty sure at this point he has totally forgotten about the tonight's conversation, so we will definitely get him back on, you know, hopefully probably on our next show, which is on the 19th. But
okay.
I wanted to I have his book sitting in front of me, and it's called Black Skincare for the Practicing Professional by Angela P. Thrower. And for those of you who are not familiar with Dr. Thrower, he is a practicing skincare physician who has formulated his own ethnic skincare line for retail and professional use. He is a graduate of the University of Miami School of Medicine and a postgraduate of George Washington University Medical Center. He has appeared numerous times in print, on radio, and on TV. And Dr. Thrower also owns and operates Hair Mystique Salon in Miami Shores, and it's an upscale full-service salon. One of the questions that came, and I laugh, but one of the questions that came via email has to do with vitiligo. And the question was, they were going to ask Dr. Thrower, do you believe that Michael Jackson has vitiligo? So that's the reason why I laugh, because, you know, because they're asking that. But I wanted to briefly just read an excerpt from Dr. Thrower's book that speaks on vitiligo. And it says, vitiligo is a skin disorder that appears as white patches that come together to erase the coloration in both small and large areas of the skin. No other symptoms are associated with this condition, which is the result of the complete destruction of, and I don't know the pronunciation of this word, so Arlise, you might have to help me. It's M-A-L-A-N-O-C-Y-T-S, melanocytes.
Melanocytes,
okay, which is the result of the complete destruction of melanocytes. Although found in both white and black skin, vitiligo is much more noticeable and more of a problem in black skin. Common sites for the disorder include circular openings such as around the eyes, ears, mouth, nostrils, penis, and vagina, as well as on the arms, hands, feet, scalp, and beard. Vitiligo occurs in only 1% of the population. Wow, I didn't know that. In about half of these people, it begins before the age of 20 and is present in 33% of members of the person's family. I didn't know that either.
Wow.
I really don't know anyone that has vitiligo and other members of their family have it. There's no difference in incidence by sex or race. The condition is not contagious, but can be psychologically devastating. I'm sure of that. Those who suffer from this condition are usually in good health otherwise. The condition varies with each person, and it is impossible to predict either the course of the condition or the extent it will reach. It often begins suddenly and progresses rapidly and occasionally stops, then restarts. Wow. This cycle can continue indefinitely. The skin will rarely repigment itself spontaneously. Sufferers must be careful with exposure to the sun because they no longer have the protection of melanin in the affected areas. Sunblocks and clothing that shield them from the direct effects of the sun are important. And they say treatment for vitiligo is disappointing and at present is limited to either repigmentation or depigmentation. Temporary repigmentation can be achieved with the use of opaque makeup products and the desired skin color. More permanent repigmentation is recommended only for persons with limited vitiligo in small areas of the body. Treatment begins with the use of low to high potency steroids to the affected area twice a day for several months. The dosage depends on the effectiveness of the treatment and the presence of side effects. This treatment is generally safe and can be very effective. Note, however, that although topical steroids can be effective in repigmenting areas where the pigmentation has been destroyed, they can have the opposite effect on pigmented areas where their use can cause hypopigmentation.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And they say depigmentation is the treatment of last resort for vitiligo. This is the process of removing all visible pigment from the skin, leaving the skin with a uniformly white appearance in black skin and sometimes a light pinkish color in white skin. Many sufferers of the condition prefer having skin one uniform color as opposed to having the spotty discoloration of vitiligo. Those who do want a completely white look can take a prescription synthetic beta-carotene, which will produce a more normal-looking fair skin color.
That'd be Michael Jackson.
The decision to undergo the depigmentation treatment can be emotionally wrenching for someone with black skin. So therefore, after saying all of that, I already know your answer, but do you honestly really think Michael Jackson has vitiligo?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I do too.
I would think, why would anyone go through the measures of lightening their skin, you know, mm-hmm. To me, I don't know. I would believe that he would have vitiligo and he wouldn't go through those measures. Let me state it that way. But yeah.
And they did say here that you know, the common sites for this disorder, you know, are around the eyes, ears, mouth, the hands, the feet. And if we remember correctly, you know, how Michael started wearing the one glove, and then of course mm-hmm. later we were to hear that's because that's where the vitiligo was starting.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you look at some older pictures of him when he first came out, you can see on his face, I could remember, it wasn't really bad, but you know how some brown-skinned people just have, like, really light patches on their face, and it doesn't look crazy or off. But it could have just started very ever so lightly on his face, but then he really saw it on his hands. But his skin was never one straight complexion. To me, it was kind of blotchy. He had blotchy skin. Wasn't bad, you know, at all. It wasn't like extreme vitiligo where the pigmentation was completely gone, but it was blotchy. It was some old pictures of him, like when he first came out, and you could see him as young Michael Jackson. And if you look truly at just general pictures of him, you could see the blotchiness in his skin.
Right.
So one would believe that that's why,
exactly.
Light as he is now.
So pretty much if that's the case, you know, you're saying that you could see some things that, you know, that could have led to this. So it seemed like that took some time, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, I'm pretty sure that they, you know, as you're talking about Michael Jackson in the limelight, I'm pretty sure he was in his process before he all became one color. He was covering it up until, you know, it
right.
was, you know, where he needed it to be. for him to be comfortable. Because it's like you're talking about, he was brown, and then, you know, as the skin started lightening, you know, so did his makeup get lighter to the point that it was just like, wham, really light.
Right, and then all over.
Yeah.
So, you know, we see here where the depigmentation treatment is pretty much probably what he has gone through. Because now when you see him, it's his whole face, neck, his arms, hands, you know, pretty much the skin that you see exposed, it's all one color.
Yeah.
Pretty much now. And
I would like to see him in some shorts.
Well, right, some shorts. Well, at that point, he's probably, has probably lightened his whole entire body.
Mm-hmm.
Because the vitiligo
that would
probably
be the really the proof, because you really don't see his hands. He's always wearing long sleeves. No, he's had some short sleeves on. I take that back since he's lightened up. So one would believe his whole body is light now.
Yeah, probably so. And I'm pretty sure if it was on his arms and hands, then I'm pretty sure it was probably on his legs and feet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but that's kind of interesting to know, because I worked with a gentleman just the other day who had vitiligo around his eye. It was just one eye, and I didn't ask any questions as far as, and I guess I should have. I wasn't even thinking about, you know, this show, but I really should have asked him if he had it anywhere else on his body. But I really think that was the only place, because when I got ready to do his makeup and I matched his foundation, I was getting ready to apply the foundation, and I noticed that he had a patch of foundation on his face near his eye. And that was it. And I guess he realized that I noticed it, and he said, oh, I have foundation on right here because I have vitiligo around my eye. He said, but that's the only place. So I just,
okay.
You know, I just assumed that was the only place that he had the vitiligo, but, or at least the only place on his face anyway. So it's just kind of interesting, you know, you really see that a little more. Yeah, and I do see some African-American people who have it, and they don't cover up.
Oh, yeah.
They don't cover up at all. And I guess maybe they feel like, look, I'm not going to be doing this every day, especially if it's all over.
Yeah, that's a lot of covering up. And, you know, we all talk about the expensive makeup, but could you imagine, you know, having to buy, you know, something that is a lot more full coverage to
mm-hmm.
cover up, because you're trying to get a flawless look and you're doing this every day, and then you need to make sure that this makeup can withstand the wear and tear of the day and not fade away, because of course you don't want to put that makeup on and it begins to fade and, you know, people start to see the blotchiness come through, or, you know, start seeing, you know, that you've lost pigmentation in one area. So it could be, you know, as I said, quite devastating.
Absolutely. And I can imagine that the depigmentation treatment that we're assuming Michael Jackson had is probably very expensive.
Oh, yeah. I'm
you
sure
know?
Of it.
So,
I'm sure of it.
Yeah, so I'm sure people would either buy the makeup or don't do it at all. So.
Yeah.
Also, another question that I had that I had for Dr. Thrower, and I'm not sure if you're very familiar, but what is adult acne? And that came in via email as well. A lot of people want to know, what is adult acne? How is it different from acne when you're a teen?
It's just a different stage in your life. Now, a doctor may say something different, but how we have always learned of it in the spa arena is that you get this client that'll come in and they're 35-ish, and they're like, all of a sudden now I'm just starting to break out. And when you kind of listen and you hear their history, you hear that as growing up as a teen, they never had any acne problems. Their skin was beautiful. They pretty much just rinsed their face with water every day, but they had gorgeous, gorgeous skin. Well, all of a sudden, as they get older, you can't keep that same routine up. You know, environment has changed. You're talking about years and if you want to say give or take 20-year difference, and it's like 20 years ago, that may have worked for you. But 20 years into it, with the environment and the way that things are, the pollution in the air, your skin needs some type of barrier. So with that sitting on the skin and just you're rinsing it with water, you're not cleaning it. So, you know, I always try to give people an example of something they can visualize. If you washed a grimy, dirty plate with just water, would you feel that that was clean? And the answer is always no.
Right.
So if you're not using any type of cleanser or soap agent on this plate, and if you're not using any type of cleanser on your face, then why do you feel like your face is clean? But you would get up in the morning and put that makeup back on your face again and cleanse your face again at night with water because you feel like you're cleaning it. But if that same plate, you rinsed it or cleaned it with water and you quote-unquote said it was clean, would you eat out of that plate? So to me, it's the same analogy. It's like you have to use something to remove the environment from your face. And, of course, with African Americans, women of color, and just using product in your hair, and you're laying down on your pillow, and your face is just constantly rubbing in it, in your hair and your pillow all night. But then you get up in the morning, and you rinse your face with water again. It's like at some time, when are you ever really cleansing your face? So that's where the adult acne comes in, because your practices over time has basically caught up with you. That's the way that I view it, and it has been known to be true as far as the people that I have dealt with and had as clients, that once they get themselves on a good regimen, it's fine. You don't tend to have it. I mean, but of course, your stress levels are different, your hormones are different, people who have had children, your job environment, just things that you do, your daily life is totally different 20 years ago than what it is now. You're going to have the host cue. Hello?
Hello, Ali.
What happened?
I don't know, but you can continue with your answer.
Oh, okay. So pretty much with doing that, you just tend to have the breakouts, and the breakouts come later in life because pretty much later in life, things are changing for you.
Right.
So I tell people when their first question is, why am I breaking out now? And I just kind of get a history, and then I just kind of make them see what they haven't been doing versus what they need to be doing to continue. Because if you start people or children off now, 9, 10 years old, with a good care regimen and something that they can just keep working themselves through, the likelihood later on in life of having the adult acne is unlikely, because it's just basically practicing good skincare. But if you're never practicing it, then, of course, later on it's going to be that you're breaking out or you're having this constant acne problem.
Right. Now, you're saying practicing good skincare. How do we practice good skincare?
Definitely a good skincare regimen. There are different types of skin. There's dry, there's sensitive, there's oily, there's oil dry. Knowing your skin and knowing how to take care of it just is made for having better skin. It's like you have to know what you have or what you're working with to better it. So if for instance, if you have dry skin and you're just getting into the skincare thing, you know, and you're trying to find the right skincare, you know, creamy base or light. I tend to tell people with drier skin to use more of a moisturizing type of cleanser and moisturizer. To add that moisture back into the skin, it's kind of like giving the skin a drink of water. But you have to know what you have, because if you have oily skin and you're using a moisturizing cleanser, just straight oily skin, not oil dry skin, but just oily skin, and you're using a moisturizing cleanser and a deeper moisturizer, then of course you're clogging your pores, and then you're going to break out. So you're thinking the product is doing it, which inevitably it is. But I think that's a lot of problems that we, just as consumers, that we don't give the product a chance to work. It's like we put it on our face and we want beautiful skin by tomorrow. We got to kind of stick with it. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. It's like I tell all of my clients, be loyal to the product and give it a chance to work for you before you fire it or before you disown it and say it's not working. You know, at least 4 weeks. Try the product 4 weeks as directed, and you know, it's going to me, it's going to give you the results that you need. Sometimes it'll show up before then, you know, but, you know, if at least 4 weeks, you know, and I'm not saying you'll never break out again, because that doesn't actually, you know, that's not actually in the product for you never to break out again, but the skin is being cleansed and you don't react to things like you did when you wasn't cleansing your skin.
Right. Now, I'm looking at Dr. Thoreau's book, and he is suggesting that black skin, when we were talking about acne, that is, those black skin that has acne should receive facial treatments as a standard procedure.
I agree.
You agree?
It's a deeper form of cleansing. It's things that our skin, with the larger pores, your skin tends to become more congested. Facials have a way of decongesting the skin. It's kind of like taking, you know, medicine for the skin and just getting in there and making it feel fresh and renewed. That's what that decongesting is, and really working around the areas that are very, like the nose and around the mouth and the chin, which are areas that tend to have a lot more of your congested pores.
Okay.
So I agree. I would definitely agree, you know, to have facials more on the regular basis. I tell my clients either once a month if it's in their budget or every 2 months, you know. But, of course, after seeing them, you can kind of assess and say, yeah, you can go every 3 months. You know, you kind of give them a prescription of what they need, but definitely coming in to receive the facials.
Okay. Now let me just read what he says about that. He says that facial treatments for black acne-formed skin should be considered standard procedure. These treatments allow the skin to rebalance its pH, which is important in black skin to minimize unseen skin irritation and to exfoliate dull skin cells that can make the skin look gray, dull, discolored, and unhealthy. Manual extractions must be performed carefully in black acne-formed skin. This step should be undertaken only after first preparing the skin with steaming. What do you think black skin, those of us with black skin, can do about the scars that are left after acne?
Some like to take the quick approach of getting a medical grade bleaching cream and using that. I tend to like to go more of the natural way. I would recommend it, but I can only recommend it upon seeing your skin. And I'm a firm believer of exfoliating the skin a little bit more regularly than 2 times a week. I'm not sure what Dr. Thrower's suggestion on exfoliation is, but I tend to think that black skin can exfoliate a little bit more than non-black skin, especially if your skin is easily to leave like pigmentation marks and things of that nature. Exfoliate. That I am a firm believer of that. I think that I have lived by it for over 10 years doing it. I exfoliate my skin at least 6 out of 7 days a week. And if I don't do it on that seventh day, it's just because I was rushing and I just didn't have the time to do it. But now I actually have a pumice stone type of cleanser. So actually I exfoliate every day, not twice a day, but just every day once a day. So I'll use it like a regular cleanser at night.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to ask, you know, since we should be cleaning our face twice a day, at least twice a day, I was going to ask, exfoliating only once, or are you doing it twice? Seems like twice would be a little too much.
A little much. You will overstimulate the skin. You tend to overstimulate the skin if you're exfoliating too much, because it does kind of get it's called sebaceous glands, but it gets your oil glands really, really moving, and sometimes it will cause you to produce more oil in the skin. So you don't want to do it twice a day. You definitely, if your skin can handle it. And I tell everybody, don't exfoliate your face like you're trying to take it off. Just gently sloughing off, just in circular motion, just lightly trying to just, you know, rejuvenate the skin. You're not really trying to do it harshly. Like if you rub harder, that when you rinse it off, that mark's going to be gone. That's not the case. And actually, you can make the skin worse and make the skin darker. So you just want to kind of lightly do it where you're just sloughing off the skin cells.
Well, let me ask you, what about those people who have the scars from acne, they're dark, and they've, let's say they've never done anything about it, and they've had these scars, let's just say, for 5 years, but now they want to do something about it. Is exfoliating a little too late now?
No, exfoliating is not too late to exfoliate. I would you can start now. It's pretty much because it's just dull skin, and the skin is remembering. Like say if you, I'm just going to use more common terms. If you kind of picked at your skin and you have a pimple there, and you want to pick at it. And then all of a sudden, 2 days later, you notice that that area is dark. Because people do tend to pick at their face when they see, you know, like a little bump or something there. So if it's old and all of a sudden now that mark has been there for like a week, and you're like, okay, I'm tired of looking at this. I really want it gone. I don't want to cover it up with makeup anymore. How can I get my skin back to where it was, you know, before I had started having these little minor breakouts? Then that's when you would go in and start exfoliating with a regimen. But you got to get that regimen, and you got to, like I said, you got to be true and loyal to the product and give it a chance to work, because we don't do it. We'll do it for 2 weeks and like, oh, it's still there. This product's not working, you know. But I think that it works better than actually bleaching the skin, because bleach is actually bleach is photosensitive, and a lot of us are not even using sunscreen the way that we should, even as African Americans. So if you're going to use a bleaching product, then you're out there in the sun. It can have an adverse reaction, whereas that area that you're trying to lighten can actually be darkened from the bleach.
From the bleach.
So
and
it's
you
things
know,
like that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and listening to you answer that question, as well as listening to what you were saying a few minutes ago about the skincare products and using the appropriate types of cleansers for your particular skin type, it brought to my mind that, you know, sometimes cosmetics can play a role in the development of acne if you are not using the appropriate products for your particular skin type. And I think because of our ignorance in that area, whether it's skincare products, whether it's color cosmetics, you know, foundations, the lack of using sunscreen, I think a lot of that plays a part in sometimes why we may have some of these skin issues like the acne and the dark spots or whatever. You know, like we go grab a bleaching cream, but we really don't know what's in that cream. We're not even using the proper skincare products or even the proper skincare products for our oily skin. You know, we may be using a product for a normal skin or a dry skin person when we really need to be using something, you know, that addresses our need. And so I think
that's self-diagnosing, but definitely we tend to self-diagnose ourselves. Oh, my skin is this, and it's completely not. It's completely the opposite. And for years or months, however you're going on using this product, like you said, and it's completely wrong for you. And that's why I like to take more of the natural approach of exfoliating the skin. Yes, it takes a little bit longer, but the fact of it is that I can go on, and as I am conditioning at one spot and removing hyperpigmentation, it's actually giving me this glow upon my face because I am exfoliating my whole face and I'm getting the healthiness that I need for the entire face and not just bleaching this one particular spot and waiting for it to go away and then trying to work it into my regimen, and it doesn't work because you have in the beginning already self-diagnosed yourself, so you don't know if it's going to work or not. And that's how we become frustrated with so many, all of these products that are on the market, when if you would just give a product a chance, and I'm know I keep saying that, but I just find that so true with consumers. It's like you have so many products in your cabinet, and you're and the minute someone mentions something different to you, and because it works for them, you jump on that bandwagon, and you'll have hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of product in your cabinet, and none of them are working for you. Then you're mixing and matching, and you're trying, you know, you're having a cocktail of skincare products, and it's still not getting across the way that you want it to.
Right, absolutely. And it's so important that when we go into these department stores or even CVS or what have you, and we're looking for products, it's so important that we go in knowing our particular skin type. We go in, you know, we have a desired product in mind, but we need to go in knowing our skin type, knowing exactly what we're looking for. Because when you go in and just say, oh, I want this foundation, all because you know that everybody else uses Studio Fix, so you want the Studio Fix, but you are just want them to just tell you what color, you know, it's more than just color.
Exactly.
You know, about the proper type of foundation. Is it something moisturizing that you know that you need, like you were talking about the skincare product? We need to do the same thing when it comes to our color cosmetics. As makeup artists, do you typically, because, you know, a lot of people, you know, when you go to do makeup, a lot of people look at your skin and say, oh, you have beautiful skin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and sometimes they're looking at you like, oh, do you have on makeup? And sometimes you don't even really have on a lot of makeup. You might have on
right.
really light makeup, just a little bit of powder dusted across your face or something, you know, very light. And they look at you like you have the greatest skin, and you may have the greatest skin, but
right.
I try to get the point across to people that good makeup starts with good skin.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just that's just how it goes, and it's just that simple. And a lot of times, you don't even have to wear your makeup heavy if your skin is good. It doesn't need all of that.
Exactly, and makeup is to me, it's to give you a finished look. You can have, like, great skin, and you can just pop a little bit of powder, even if it's a bronzer or a shimmer or something, and it's just going to give you that complete look. So I don't, you know, people think that sometimes, oh, if they have bad skin, they'll just pile on the makeup, but if the canvas is not right, the makeup is not going to give that illusion that you want. You know,
right.
For that makeup, because it won't just come across, but it does definitely start with gray skin, But a lot of it is that you got to know, well, first of all, know what you're doing when you're applying it. Even with that, it's like people gravitate to a makeup product just because of the name or just because of someone recommending it. But that might not work for you as a person. You know, you have to try these products and be tested with these products to see if it's going to, you know, give my skin that glow or that look that I want. You know, and should I be the one that's using a powder, or should I be the one that's using more of a moisturizing foundation, or should I be the one that's using full coverage? It's things that people need to learn to educate themselves with product and not just go for it just because, you know, half of the world is just using a product and it looks like, oh, if it's good for them, then that's what I should be using too.
Exactly. But that's, you know, that's actually a great place to end this conversation. I thank you so much, Arlise, for being our guest co-host, filling in for my sister's absence, but then also much taking over the entire conversation because Dr. Angela P. Thrower was not with us tonight, but we will definitely have him back on the show. Once we make sure that everybody has the dates right, we'll definitely make sure we have him back on the show. But I wanted to continue to encourage everyone to tune in and listen to the show every other Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And our next episode for March 19th at 9 p.m. So, again, join us March 19th at 9 p.m., and we'll continue our discussion. We had something else planned for the 19th, but based on scheduling, we may have Dr. Thrower on that date. So we'll keep you posted. Just check us out on Facebook. check us out on MySpace, Twitter. Check out our website. We'll be keeping you posted as to who's going to be on that show on the 19th. But again, thank you for listening. I'd like to encourage the listeners to call in. Please call in, ask questions, help us get through these conversations. We need your questions. We need you to participate in the show. And the call-in number is 914-803-99. Again, it's 914-803-4399. Again, thank you, Arlise, for tuning in and being with us.
You're welcome. Pleasure being here.
Thank you. Good night, everybody. The light.